Welcome to the Butts and Seats podcast, episode number 144.
Woo! I feel like we just took a shot for this podcast. I know we didn't, but it feels like we just did a shot.
We did on the Patreon.
Yeah, and I feel like we did back-to-back episodes. I'm wrong, obviously, but in my head, we did back-to-back.
No, we're just recording these close together.
We are, yes. So close together that I am confusing what happened on Mayhem with what happened on Fall Brawl 1996.
I'm Nick, alongside Emily.
Hello!
Emily, what is it we do here on this show?
Well, on this show, we take a week-by-week look at the slow but inevitable downfall of WCW through the late 90s and early 2000s.
The impending downfall.
You try to change the words every time. I think you've pitched like three or four different versions. None stick. I know what I know. I'm not changing my ways now.
I wasn't pitching different verbiage. I was just commenting.
That's true.
Today we're here to talk about Mayhem 2000.
It was an episode.
Yeah, it was taking place on your birthday in the timeline.
Yeah, and this is my sixth birthday.
This episode's coming out on our five-year podcasting anniversary.
Imagine if this was our six-year podcasting anniversary. That would have been so serendipitous. It's my sixth birthday in timeline. It would have been our sixth birthday as a podcast.
I was really ready for this to somehow be a 6-7 joke. I was really...
Oh my god, no. Nick, we're 30.
But Mayhem 2000 took place in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And, I have the buy rate info. It's not good.
Shocker. I could have told you the buy rate would be bad based on the audience of this show.
Emily, do you want to do a little Price is Right?
Sure.
So, last month at Halloween Havoc, WCW did 70,000 buys. Last year at Mayhem, WCW did 200,000 buys. How many buys did this show do?
I'm going to say 65,000 buys.
Oh, I'm sorry. Overshot it. 55,000 buys.
That one smarts.
This is tied for the second lowest, along with, I think, Battle Bowl is the show. It is the lowest if you don't count Starrcade 87, because there was some heavy monopoly tactics from WWF during that show. Oh. They put Survivor Series on the same night and then told pay-per-view providers, if you carry Starrcade, you won't get WrestleMania. So... that one feels a little unfair.
Yeah.
Oh, and all the pay-per-view providers got pissed at WCW for that.
For the 87 one?
Yes.
Cool.
Because they had the gall to get counter-programmed.
They had the gall. That's how competitive programming works. Like, anyway, we're talking about 2000. Let's not get locked down in the 87 of it all. 2000 has its own problems.
I don't have much backstage notes for this show, as a lot of the ones I kind of have are going to be more for Nitro next episode. So this show didn't do well buy rate wise. It also didn't do great attendance wise.
Yay!
2,800 paid.
Only 2,800?
Yep, they gave out 1,000 free tickets.
Oh.
And there's a 10,000 seat arena for like basketball. And for scale, CFG by us is an 11,000 seat arena for basketball.
Yikes.
So picture CFG a third full.
Ugh. Honestly, that sounds like a dream, because the concourse at CFG, if it's even remotely full, nightmare. So this might be ideal.
Conan is not here tonight due to family health issues. He's back pretty quickly, but
still
something's going on with his family, so excused absence.
He cleared it with the front office.
We do get a kayfabe explanation for this later.
Oh, I don't care.
Jerry Jarrett, Jeff Jarrett's father, was apparently offered full control of WCW. He said no. He doesn't want it.
Wait, I thought Jerry Jarrett was one of the men that was like going to buy the company.
Yes, he wants to own the company and run it his way. He doesn't want to run it for the current management.
Oh, okay, that's fair. Yeah, I wouldn't accept that either.
Well, speaking of buying the show, Eric Bischoff is still putting together a plan to buy WCW, and his plan is to tape shows in Vegas, much like he did in Disney World for like the early 90s.
Yeah, that was a good plan. I remember we talked about this in Controversy Creates Cash, the book report on Patreon, available now. Bischoff's plan of recording in one standard location is not a bad plan. TNA is successful with it in the future. Like, it's not bad.
Successful.
When you're with a dying company that is actively floundering for life, it's not a bad plan.
But that's it for my backstage notes. So it's time for a weather report, where there's always thunder. Yeah, not as critical a show on this one. They really phoned this one in.
This is just a light thunderstorm. It's an isolated thunderstorm, not a Cat 5 hurricane.
Meng wins a handicap match by disqualification because Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare can't beat him when they have the numbers advantage. Ric Flair announces a restraining order between Scott Steiner and Booker T until Sunday. And if they fight before, Booker T is suspended.
That's a really short-lived restraining order.
Yeah, and if they interact, Steiner loses his title shot. This, much like a lot of things, as per usual, was cut from Peacock.
Goody.
Now, this one, they did note it's the most complete form possible due to technical difficulties. Oh, okay. But it's still, only the backstage stuff is cut.
Weird.
Like, there's a lot of it on here. It's consistent week to week of, like, if there's stuff cut, it's the backstage stuff. I don't know.
I need somebody in, like, Peacock executive to explain to me why that might be.
This is back from, like, the WWE Network, though.
Somebody tell me.
Three Count are still calling themselves Three Count, notably.
It should be Two Count.
Alex Wright can only afford to pay half of Chronic, so Brian Clark fights the Filthy Animals in a handicap match. Like, why would you make it harder for yourself like that? Like, why would you agree to those terms? Yeah. Oh, and he wins, because I guess he's just that much better than Meng, or the Thrillers are that bad. Also, Alex Wright paying them, cut from Peacock.
Oh, so we don't know why on Peacock they worked for them?
He just comes out and has a match. I think commentary provides some context.
But, okay.
Oh, also cut from Peacock. Stevie Ray interviews Scott Steiner earlier today, and Stevie Ray is sitting behind a plastic screen, so Scott Steiner like can't attack him.
Okay.
Except at some point, they pull the camera out too wide, and you can see that he could just go around.
So it's not quite Pope-mobile.
No. Steiner swears a bunch, and Booker comes up and hits him with a chair. This was earlier in the day, so the restraining order had not been put in place yet. But Booker T comes out for a promo, and he does apologize for giving Major Guns a bookend. He's like, I haven't been myself lately.
Okay.
And Stevie Ray is like, why are you apologizing? I found that shit hilarious.
Yeah, I'm sure you did, Mr. I Hate Women. Booker T is a kind, good man.
Booker has six words for Goldberg. Don't hate the player. Hate the game.
You hit player too hard. It's playa.
Yeah, that's still seven words, babe.
Play on, play it.
Goldberg comes out. He wants a title shot after Mayhem. So I'm like, so that streak storyline? What are we doing with that? Notably, this was taped the same day as Nitro, and it was vague on Nitro, so.
Yeah.
They clear that up on this show.
Do they, though? Because, I mean, even in the pay-per-view, they're like, this was a Russo thing. Like, are we even still standing by this streak thing? Like, they do mention it in the pay-per-view.
The two shake hands at the end of the segment. Buff Bagwell and the Cat have pay-per-view matches against Jeff Jarrett and Shane Douglas, respectively. Shane Douglas is facing them in a tag match and brings out his mystery partner, Jeff Jarrett.
Okay.
Why? What? That's like the least surprising person you could pick. That should have just been booked. I don't know why it was a surprise.
I guess because we haven't seen Jeff Jarrett with this person in a while. I don't know.
We saw him on Nitro.
It's a surprise because it hadn't been announced. Stop looking for reasons to be upset. Like, there are plenty of reasons to be upset by this shit.
And in the main event, DDP has his first match back in a while and loses due to Natural Born Thrillers interference. He here and tonight is wrestling just in, like, black tights. It's a weird look. Like, there's no design on the pants.
Yeah, just sleek.
Oh, it was also a lumberjack match, except all the lumberjacks brawl to the back in the first, like, 3 minutes.
Sure.
Minus, you know, the key players.
Yeah.
Why did you even have it be a lumberjack match? But that's it for Thunder. And that brings us to our main show. Emily, are you ready for some mayhem?
Sure. I'm sure it's going to be crazy.
Do you remember at all what happened on last year's mayhem?
No.
That was the end of the world title tournament and Bret Hart won the title for the first time.
Bret Hart was there?
You remember Bret Hart?
Nope.
He faced Chris Benoit.
I'm sure it was a great episode. I'm sure I would love to go back and listen to it. And you can do that by going back on our back catalog on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, all those things.
Half these don't exist anymore.
I'll go back and listen to the Mayhem 99 episode.
At the end of that, we're probably like, oh, man, that's a bad show.
Probably. I'm not going to pretend to remember it because it was probably a bad show.
No, but little did we know. But let's get into mayhem. Booker T arrived earlier today and was suddenly mobbed by fans who all coordinate with the camera to come in at the same moment.
Yeah, big air quote on fans. They all come in at the same time. They all kind of just look like indie wrestlers. I think they're just indie wrestlers.
Nary a child to be found.
No weird adult fan that's like a little too into it, you know?
And when Scott Steiner arrived, he was told to go sign in, and he smashed up the sign-in table with lead pipe, and he swings the pipe on the table at first, And then he pauses. Like, I really think he thought the table was going
to
break.
I thought that swing was just to destroy the computer, which he did.
Well, yeah, he broke that after, but no, the first one was to the center of the table.
One of the hits went to the computer.
Yes.
Like sequentially. It's not like he hit it and wait for it to break.
We then get the intro package, all about the concept of mayhem and highlighting some of the bigger matches.
Three of them. Out of 12?
Yes. Jesus. Yeah, I got 12 match card here tonight. We get the opening pyro. It's Tony Schiavone, Mark Madden, and Stevie Ray on commentary.
He's going to ruin my birthday.
We see a clip from earlier today of, hey, Ric Flair was in the ring cutting a promo. He doesn't fucking say anything. It's great to do a show here in Milwaukee. Got some great fans.
Why did we cut to this?
Yeah, I don't know.
He didn't set up anything. He didn't cut a promo on anyone. He didn't move any stories forward. Why did we see this?
But we go straight into our first match. It's Kiwi with Paisley versus Mike Sanders for the Cruiserweight title.
So two things right off the bat. One, not a drop of glitter on Kiwi tonight.
Fucking, yeah.
He is dry.
He replaced it all with HGH, it looks like. Jesus. He is Mike jacked. Sanders.
Mike Sanders has a sporty little chin strap beard going on. Looks fucking terrible.
Yeah, with that, I'm never sure, like, all right, are you trying to look shitty because you're a heel or do you have bad taste?
I think he has bad taste. I think he thinks he looks hot here.
So my Stevie Ray notes fall off, I think, as the show goes on. But the first words out of his mouth tonight is talking about yaks.
Sure.
I like,
well, because Paisley's here.
Yeah, he goes in on Paisley. I'm like, dude, that's your future sister-in-law.
Right. That one's a more egregious one of like, this is your future family, man. Like,
also, she has done nothing. She has arrived at the show and it's like, wow, I hate women.
Stevie Ray hates women. It's canon.
Sanders grabs a mic and slaps Kiwi, who jumps on Sanders. We get talk of Angry Allen.
So I had never heard his name actually be uttered. Like, this is his alter ego's name. Angry Allen. Like, I feel like you might have heard this. I never heard this. Maybe this came on Thunder? I don't know, but I'm assuming, maybe. Like, his name is Allen.
Yeah, because Tony references Angry Allen, and he's like, where'd you hear that? Oh, from Paisley. And Steve's like, I don't want to listen to women. It's like,
geez. So he really does hate women. Is Quibi's actual name Allen?
I know he goes on to wrestle as Allen Funk, so
probably.
Yeah.
His name is probably Allen.
Mike Sanders is sent to the floor and brings out the Natural Born Thrillers. The Thrillers just keep beating down Kiwi behind the ref's back. And I guess behind the ref's back, because he just like distracted by a butterfly. We get the Super Beal into the ring, which Sanders catches Kiwi out of the air and turns it into a power slam. Meng and Paisley, who has put on an afro wig.
So when the Natural Born Thrillers came out, you missed this. Paisley ran to the back to like go find help, I guess. So when she runs to the back, she comes back wearing this big afro wig that is very akin to Meng's hair. And so the two of them walk out together, matching hairstyles, a la Team Bad Hair Day.
Yeah, Meng is here to fight all the Thrillers. And the numbers game tries to get to Meng, but he has two Thrillers in like the Tongan death grip, and they keep hitting him, and he doesn't go down. It's like, oh, he is just killing them.
He's a brick shithouse, as you'd like to say.
Ric Flair and security come out to take everyone not in the match away. And it's like, oh yeah, there's a match here. Sanders hits a snapmare and a kick. Sanders locks in a rest hold because clearly they've been working so hard while all the shenanigans were happening.
I was convinced when Flair kicked everybody out from ringside that a singular Thriller hid under the ring.
Yeah.
And that one Thriller was going to be what cost Kiwi the match. Like, that one Thriller was going to come out and get him, and then Sanders was going to get the win.
Yeah, notably, Paisley is still out here. She's allowed to stay.
Yeah, I was wrong, by the way. That is not what happens.
Kiwi hits a springboard sunset flip, but then is put down with a clothesline. Kiwi powers out of a rest hold and hits a weak-looking back suplex. Mark Madden makes fun of Stevie for riding his brother's coattails, and it was like, oh, that felt pointed.
Because it was. I mean, what is Stevie doing right now? Badly commentating while his brother is the fucking champion? Like, who's the real winner, brother?
Kiwi hits a 10-punch spot in the corner and then wants a sunset flip powerbomb to the floor, but Sanders turns it into a Hurricane Rana. Kiwi takes Paisley's wig and kind of punches Sanders with it.
Oh my god, yeah, and commentary is like, oh, I've never seen a wig be used as a weapon before! Like, guys.
So Paisley just comes into the ring and hits a handspring elbow. Mark Madden's like, DQ? And I hate this, but multiple times tonight, we find ourselves agreeing with Mark Madden.
No, he's the voice of reason.
Stevie Ray has made us appreciate Mark Madden.
Stevie Ray calls Paisley's interference a yak attack.
Finish the match, Mike Sanders counters a back suplex and hits a 3.0, aka the Randy Orton backbreaker, for the win. I feel like if you just let these guys wrestle, it might have been fine, but...
Maybe.
You just did so much to draw attention away from the wrestling.
I have no faith in Mike Sanders' ability to wrestle.
He seems fine. Like,
I don't know. I don't... Like I said, I have no faith. Kiwi has proven that he can put on a good match. Sanders has not.
Yeah, like the first half of this match just felt like, all right, let's set up the fact that we can't do any interference the rest of the show.
Yeah.
So yeah, disappointing on that front.
Yes.
Mean Gene is backstage with Ric Flair.
Is it, could it be?
No.
No.
No fun allowed.
We really got excited for this one. We really thought we were getting a mean boo by God Gene.
Ooh, maybe in 96, 97.
I hope so. I really do. I've missed those. I've missed excited Flair. I miss passionate for his job Flair.
Yeah, this is not him.
No, this man could not give less of a fuck about what he's doing.
The old Rick can't come to the phone right now. Why? Because he's dead. Rick says WCW represents wrestling and says, unless you're like a valet or a manager, no outside interference. Like, no one can be at ringside. Yeah, we got that going for us.
So I got that going for me, which is nice.
The Boogie Knights are with Chronic, and Disco is still hurt. They hire Chronic for 7.5 minutes after some negotiation, because the Boogie Knights only have so much money, and they want to hire Chronic for the match. And like, it's going to be a handicap match, but it's the other way now. And so, yeah, they negotiate to 7.5 minutes of Chronic. Remember that.
It's not a bad deal.
Yeah, but like, with that setup, I'm like, all right, just counting the minutes till Chronic leaves this match.
Well, yeah. You only have to count to 7.5.
Mean Gene is then with Jamie Noble and Evan Courageous. Evan Courageous, his 3 count is jealous and keeps going on about North Kakalaki.
So, of course, Jamie is like, wait, you're from North Carolina. I'm from North Carolina. Where are you from? Turns out they're from around the same area. And, oop, Evan Courageous dated Jamie's sister and played her.
Yeah, and Gene closes this out with like an incest joke about, oh, they could be related.
Could have been worse being from North Carolina. They could have been related. So with that promo, Jamie and Evan have like sown the seeds of dissension. It is not prevalent yet, but it is there.
You think they're going to go anywhere with this?
Yes. Marie came back, didn't she?
Next, the state of Crowbar. He's with the Nitro Girls.
Okay, you can't say the state of him when your boy Mike Awesome is not doing any better. In fact, he is down for the fucking count. Yeah. Crowbar is doing great. Crowbar is getting puss and slaying boys. Like, he's doing fine. He's killing it.
He says farewell to the ladies. Great. And he's like, I have a match to get ready for.
Yeah. And he puts career first. Who doesn't want that in a man?
I wonder, will this lead to anything with Daphne or...
Daphne's gone, I think.
I don't think she is. I think we're not done with her yet.
You can't say state of Crowbar when he, A, works the gimmick, B, is getting girls, and C, still puts on a good fucking match. I can't say the same for your boy. Mike Awesome's not doing too hot right now.
Puts on a good match.
My boy's doing great. Your boy is fucking sucking. You can't say shit.
Let's go to match number 2.
Yep.
It's 3 count versus the Young Dragons versus Noble and Courageous. 3 count have a mic, and they comment on Evan Courageous' promo, and they say that Evan Courageous has a small penis.
Your stick shift is just too small. So there is a sign in the audience. We talked about the timeline of this show and how it is happening during the year 2000 election, and there's this whole big recount thing going on. There's a sign in the audience that says, down with 3 count and Florida recount. We get a couple of Florida-esque signs and commentary drops throughout the night. But just so you know where we are in society, in the world, we're still counting those hanging chads.
3 count perform and are eventually interrupted. It seemed like they got interrupted later than they planned because they were like, all right, come on.
I'd rather watch them do stuff than fucking...
Yeah, they're interrupted by the Young Dragons and Jesus, Leia.
Leia forgot her clothes and just went to Crafty and was like, you have cling wrap? That's fine.
Everyone brawls on the ramp to start because Noble and Courageous eventually come out.
All that said, I know we were talking about women's outfits. Leia looks fucking fit as hell.
Yeah.
She keeps it fit. She looks great.
Young Dragons hit big atomic drops and then each team pauses on Irish whips to do a little dance. Noble and Courageous take everyone out. Jamie Noble hits a vault to the outside and Courageous hits a facebuster. Courageous hits a power slam and a vaulting press and then dances. Courageous and Helms go nose to nose and Courageous hits a vest press. Jamie Noble does the Billy Kidman like rocker dropper float over and then works on the arms of Helms. We cut to a shot of Leia Meow, and Stevie Ray goes, Tony, who is that? Dude.
You're not aware of the hot women in the company? Here. She's worked here for a while.
All yaks are the same, Emily.
No. Once again, though, just add it to the column of Stevie has no idea what the fuck's going on.
Yeah, I have another one of those in a second, because three count hit a German suplex spin kick combo.
What, he doesn't know what a German suplex is?
Well, no. Yang breaks up the pin, and Stevie asks, why did Quang do that?
Quang?
Quang, who was a wrestler in WWE, but also, Tony Schiavone's like, it's a three-way dance. Like, if they get the pin, they lose. Like, it makes total sense why you broke it up, but... Yeah, Tony Schiavone is losing patience for
just
Stevie
add it to
even
the
more.
Series. Stevie has no clue what's going on. What else is really new?
Noble counters a rocker dropper with a power bomb, and then the Dragons double team Shannon Moore. Kaz winds up for a kick, but Shannon Moore ducks. Hayashi follows it up with a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker. Another weird Stevie thing. He's like, oh, I think Kaz was like loading up his boot because he's like stomping the mat.
Loading his boot?
Yeah, like implying he's like cheating somehow. And is like, the ref really needs to be taking a look at that. It's like, he didn't do anything.
Nope.
That's the thing. Steve Ray's an idiot, but he also wants to be the smartest guy around.
Yes, he thinks he's smart. He's just blatantly the stupidest.
Oh, God. It tones down in future matches, folks, but I have another. Yeah, I just have more Stevie notes. Moore hits a rocker dropper, and Tyson Helms, who hits a bridging German suplex. Stevie says he's never seen a suplex like that. Brother, you've probably been hit with them. The ref keeps missing pin attempts, and Helms hits a gut-wrench suplex. Kaz rolls through a sunset flip, hits a roundhouse kick. Yang then tags in, hits a bunch of strikes, even like a choke slam kind of STO-type move. Yang hits the crane kick pose, but Moore hits him from behind with a sleeper slam. Courageous hits a sloppy Michinoku driver, and Kaz hits a brainbuster. JB Noble then breaks out a fucking tombstone.
Yeah.
I feel like somebody else did that recently, and I'm like, Jesus,
it
guys.
Did. Oh, it was in Fall Brawl, and I can't remember who it was now.
I think it was like Jericho. Shane Helms hits a final cut, and then everyone does like a big dive to the floor, including Leia Meow, who takes out everyone. And I'm like,
Leia Meow, who is 100 pounds soaking wet, goes to the top rope and dives onto all of these big-ass men on the floor, and she takes them out. Again, 100 pounds, maybe.
Mark Madden's like, I bet she's dove on more men before. And Tony's like, oh man, I want to see that again. Stevie Ray scolds Tony for being horny. I'm like, really?
Also, if you think that that is what sex is, I don't know that Stevie has ever actually had sex. Maybe that's why he hates women, because no one will sleep with him. I don't dive onto men when I want to have sex with them. That's not how intercourse works.
You shouldn't be diving on men, period.
I don't dive on you.
And don't I know it. Jimmy Noble then grabs a ladder. Why?
Because fuck it, why not? No DQs, no rules, no claws.
It gets kicked into Evan Courageous. Yang into DDT, goes up top, but is crotched by Noble. Helms stops the superplex, and Helms dives off Yang's back in the corner for like a diving splash. Evan Courageous then wants a super kick, but he's stopped by Kaz Hayashi, and they set up this like double pin attempt. One group kicks out way too early, and the other one, Shannon Moore, I probably can't hear the ref because he's way far away, and totally misses the cue, like, kicks out at 5.
Yeah.
Eventually, 3Count hit a Samoan drop neckbreaker combo, and they get the win, and we, like, almost immediately cut away from this.
Yeah, this is not given any opportunity to breathe or be excited. It's just like, oh, there's something going on backstage.
So I did end up having to watch this match twice, because the first time I just watched it, the second time I was actually taking the full notes. It did feel a little more sloppy and... not put as well put together on second watching. That said, this still was a lot of fun.
This was a very fun match. Like, all six of these men can put on a good match, and they can hold my attention too, which in this day and age is hard. We have a lot of shit on the card. This was not part of it.
On paper, this had a good story coming in, but they just didn't execute it well. Like, I wish it had something better coming in.
Nothing has a good story right now. So, like, this was able to execute in the ring a good match, regardless of the story. The story sucked. This was still a good, fun match. Again, the bar, we need to recalibrate our bar because we're watching 96 NWO alongside this. We need to recalibrate our bar. This is good for 2000 Nitros.
Yeah, and I think these guys keep feuding for like ever, basically.
Yeah, that tracks. They don't know
I mean, they already have been. They're like, their big idea was, what if we took a guy out from each team and had them be a new team?
Wow. Who'd have thunk it?
But would you say this is like, go seek this out worthy or just like, good for the time?
It is a gem on a show of shit. Like, yeah. If you're watching the show, you can look forward to this match. Unfortunately, it's the second match. Yeah.
So, Emily, remember how you were talking about the state of my boy?
Yeah, he's down for the count. Yeah. He's in the middle of a table on the ground.
State of Mike Awesome. We just cut to Bam Bam Bigelow standing over Mike Awesome, who's just, like, laying through a table.
I know he's been back for a while, but I keep forgetting that Bam Bam Bigelow is around right now.
Yeah, the wall then attacks Bam Bam and just looks over Mike Awesome.
What? Why do we need the wall as part of this? That's not going to make this better.
Pamela and her new hat interview... interview the Boogie Nights and Chronic, and they double down on the time thing. And
why are they just so fucking mean to Pamela here?
I don't know.
She's just doing her job asking questions, and they're calling her a bimbo, dumb blonde, like,
well, they're heels.
Good for nothing.
I don't know.
Regardless, and it's not just them either. Like, other groups later on in the show are just straight up mean to Pamela. She doesn't deserve this.
Well,
she's already got me calling her pumpkins. Like, she doesn't need this shit, too.
Well, she was on the other foot in our next segment because Mean Gene is with Jimmy Hart on crutches. And Gene's like, oh, yeah, you said this totally real thing about the women of North Carolina, didn't you, Jimmy? And Gene calls out Jimmy's fake injury because he has a cast. And it's like, oh, I'm so hurt from Mankow attacking me.
Oh, I did take note of what he said about the women of Milwaukee. It's very simplistic. It's just women look like men. He said it's where the men are men and the women are too.
Yeah.
And then Gene calls out Jimmy Hart's cast for being fake, because obviously it's fucking fake. And he says that Jimmy is wearing a leg cast that is, quote, as real as Major Guns, and then he gets cut off. He's calling, talking about her tits.
Jimmy's also looking for three count because he wants them to come out with him.
I forget that three count is with Jimmy, which makes sense. Like, they've been in the vignettes. I just forget.
They've been in one.
I thought, like, they were in two.
Were they? I think they were just in
the
one.
I think they were in two.
Anyway, the Thrillers are in Mike Sanders' office.
Mumbles. They don't say fucking anything.
And that brings us to match number three.
Mankow.
Yep, it's Mankow in the morning with his shitty entourage versus Jimmy Hart.
Mayhem with Mankow. Honestly, his theme kind of slaps.
Ironically, it wasn't written by Jimmy Hart.
No, because it's good.
Hey, hey now. Tubby Hulkster in heaven isn't gold.
Yes.
Mankow has a mic and explains why his freak friends are here with him.
I didn't get the explanation. Yeah, it's just his entourage, right?
Yeah. Mankow calls out Mark Madden and swears at him and then calls Jimmy out to the ring. Jimmy comes out to one of his, like one of his songs, but I couldn't quite tell what it was.
No, we've definitely heard it before.
Here's the thing. It sounds like a song that has come out later. And I'm like, did Jimmy Hart pull a fucking Jimmy Hart and just
rewrite his own song? Probably. Yeah.
Stop plagiarizing if you steal from yourself. Jimmy draws out not wanting to face Mankow. And he's like, all right, give me two more weeks. And Mankow then says that Jimmy is just like Al Gore. You
and
don't
I'm
know when
George
to quit.
Bush.
And I'm George Bush, and I'll kick you right in the chad. So, I have some
timely.
I have some fun facts about Mankow and Mankow's show.
Fun facts about George Bush and Al Gore.
Fun fact: in the future, in response to the DNC chair at the time opposing the Iraq War, Mankow said he ought to be kicked out of America and tried for treason. Mankow also at one point got waterboarded on the air to prove, oh, it's not that bad, is it? And apparently the normal length of time is 8 seconds. He tapped out after six and was like, no, fuck this.
Really? Waterboarding's only 8 seconds?
Apparently, like, that's what it's, I don't know, it normally is, but he changed his tune after it happened to him. He's like, oh, no, I thought this was going to be a fun joke. This was...
It's like DJ Khaled on Hot Ones. What you're doing is illegal.
Well, apparently also the guy who was doing the waterboarding was a Marine sergeant who had no experience waterboarding, so who knows if he did it right.
I mean, he may have had experience getting waterboarded. That might have been, like, training or something. I don't know how military training works.
All right, and then I have... four of the recurring segments from Mankow. I took these from a long list. Segment number one, Chop Songy, a contest where segments of popular songs are played backwards and callers can try to guess the song.
Oh, I think I could do that.
Almost all the games are, can you guess this blank?
I could do it.
However, this act is accompanied by a satirical impression of a Chinese man complete with fake karate sounds in the background. Drunk Chick Friday. Mankow invites a group of supposedly attractive women to the studio on Friday mornings, who then become highly intoxicated and obnoxious as the show progresses.
In the morning? Morning shows generally run from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. You're going to get drunk at 7 a.m.? That's exhausting.
Skid Theater. The staff pays homeless Chicagoans to act out scenes from movies and then holds a contest for listeners to name the movie.
See, that's fucked up.
And then Tales from the Crib. Al Roker Jr., one of the entourage,
sure,
opens by saying, "Tell me why you hate white people," followed by a black person's response. And I have a hunch what? That they were not all black people.
That's a bit?
Yep.
Radio is fucking weird, man. None of the radio shows, I love morning radio. I've never listened to a radio show like this.
Yeah.
This, Howard Stern, like, this is not...
Yeah.
This is not the radio that I just informed Nick about the War of the Roses bits that a lot of radio stations do. That's the kind of shit that I listen to.
Say we have a match. I have...
Do we?
Six notes on the match.
Oh, that is two more than I have from the entire segment.
Jimmy hits Mancow with his crutch, which I thought breaks, but they have another one later. Mancow's posse clotheslines Jimmy, so three count make the save. Jimmy low blows Mancow and works him over. Jimmy goes for another crutch, but Mancow hits him with a different crutch. Mancow then peels off Jimmy's cast, and the crowd is annoyingly alive for this.
Yeah, they care a lot about Mancow Jimmy Hart. I don't really understand why, because we're not in Chicago. Is this nationally syndicated?
No, but they're in Milwaukee. You potentially still get neighboring states.
Maybe, but like that would require like syndication partnership, I think, like with other stations. And is Mancow that big?
I don't know. But Mancow hits Jimmy with the cast and wins, and I'm like, holy shit, I don't care.
Yeah. I thought it was fun. I mean, I like these weird, stupid little segments that aren't wrestling, especially on a show like this where the wrestling also fucking sucks. Like, let's have some levity.
Do this as a dark match.
No, because there's been enough build-up.
It's a regional DJ on a national fucking...
That I agree. If there hadn't been the build-up to it, then yes, absolutely make this fucking dark. But there has been build-up, so we can't make it dark. There needs to be payoff.
But yeah, it's like a regional DJ against Jimmy Hart, who is like probably never been more irrelevant in WCW than right now. Like, ironically, he's getting a pay-per-view match, but it's like, yeah, man, you are like not really managing anybody.
Mm.
Like, where's fucking Hale?
Hale?
Yeah, I think Jimmy Hart had him come out with him for the last Mancow match.
I don't know who Hale is.
He's just a big dude. There's nothing to Hale besides that. But yeah, I think we're done with Mancow, though. I don't think we get any more Mancow before the end of WCW.
I would be shocked if we did, but I also wouldn't be surprised.
Let's go backstage. Crowbar checks on Mike Awesome, who is getting stretchered out. We get like intense close-ups of the EMTs during this. It's kind of weird.
You know, he just got put into an ambulance. I didn't really give it much thought.
The MIA talk about being banned from ringside, and Rection has new merch for them.
Woo!
Ric Flair comes in, and he's like, AWOL, I want a word. It's like, ooh.
What was the word?
He puts him in the match later.
I didn't think that, honestly, when that all happened, I didn't think that this segment had anything to do with him being put in that match later. That just made sense for later.
Yeah.
That just storytelling made sense. Why this actually threw me off.
Yeah, it's just the weird inconsistency of occasionally be like, well, we have to explain this, in versus why? Like, oh, no, this makes sense. Like, they never know when to do one or the other. To me, this felt like the more logical version of what I mentioned from the weather report of, I have a mystery partner, it's Jeff Jarrett. It's like, hey, let's set up that Bam Bam does still have a match. And then, yeah.
That's true.
Oh, and speaking of Bam Bam, we see Lance Storm is chatting with Bam Bam.
We're
this will be
to
critical to later in the show, and we totally forgot about it.
We're not allowed to hear what they say, though.
Pamela Pumpkins is with the Filthy Animals, minus Conan. And the animals say Conan is basically too sexed out, and then Billy Kidman implies that he might have been having sex with Pam. And
yeah, because Ray says something along the lines of, like, Conan hooked up with some freaks. And and Billy is like, oh, you mean these freaks? And he's staring at Pamela's boobs. So, like, are you saying that he fucked only Pamela's boobs and Pamela does not remember this? Like, she's playing real coy. Like, this is a weird, weird write-off.
Yeah, the animals are basically ready to fight whoever, and Emily likes Billy Kidman's new gimmick.
They do. I like it. I think it's funny. I don't think it's a gimmick, but I think it was just a funny bit.
That match is not next, though. I feel like it probably should have been, but next, it's Vito versus Reno versus Crowbar for the hardcore title in a three the hard way match.
Why did they call it this?
And we get a Maria mention. Scratch that. We get a Marie mention.
Is her name Maria or Marie? We'll never fucking know. But the more egregious thing that we need to talk about is, why the fuck is this called a Three the Hard Way match? She could be Maria or Marie. I don't care. Why is this called Three the Hard Way?
We've already done this.
We need to, if we're going to talk about Stevie Ray not remembering shit fuck about any episode, we need to talk about this every time it comes up.
Because WCW just doesn't have good names for things.
This doesn't make any sense. Like, we've made our peace with Caged Heat. This does not make any sense.
No.
Like, per the English language, this does not make sense.
By the way, commentary does decide on Marie, so there's that.
Yeah, but I think her name was Maria in the past.
Well, they're going with this now.
Next week, it'll be Maria again.
Rito comes out with a kendo stick, and Vito has a stickball bat. The bell rings before Crowbar comes out, and he immediately comes out, so I'm like, why? But he also has a bin full of weapons. All of them trade weapon shots, and Mark Madden's like, oh yeah, and Crowbar's working hurt. I'm like, oh, is he?
Yeah, I don't remember him getting hurt.
He's like a hamstring injury. I'm like, oh, that just feels legit.
Yeah, that does not sound like something that was faked. Yeah, wouldn't know it, though.
Vito throws Crowbar into Reno on the floor. Vito hits a kendo stick shot on both men on the outside, and then a title belt shot on both men. Vito doesn't seem to want to sell at all, and then he reveals a Italian traffic cone and an Italian baseball bat, except they are still the vertical flag as opposed to...
When he says Italian traffic cone and Italian baseball bat, they are branded with the quote-unquote Italian flag as Vito sees it, which is really just the wrong flag.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be Italian branded in that sense.
Vito hits crotch shots to both men with his special bat, and then Reno hits a lid shot on both men. Crowbar then hits a German suplex, which both me and Mark Madden were like, a wrestling move? What?
In this match?
They immediately go back to weapon shots. Crowbar hits bat shots, and hey now, and he and Reno seem to ignore each other. Then, like, Slash, like, half-teaming up. It was kind of weird. Mm. They do an elaborate setup for a double flapjack to a trash can. Reno then hits everyone with a bat, and we slow everything down. Vito hits kendo stick shots, and we head towards the back. I'm like, that's not a rule anymore. We don't have to go to the back.
No, but they just want to. We're not doing this per the rules. They just want to go to the back.
Everyone brawls in the back, and it's really hard to care about the lesser moves here. Reno power slams Vito through the refreshment table. Had about like four cans of soda on it.
Yeah, like, oh no, the refreshments. I'm like, for one person?
Marie then appears and stops Reno from taking out Vito, and she's like holding back a smile here because...
Oh yeah, she's corpsing the whole time.
Yeah. Crowbar hits Reno with a chair, and Crowbar wins.
Yeah.
I wanted to like this, and I just...
Oh, it was really stupid.
Yeah, like, it's just them doing things. Just like, all right, I hit you. There's no selling, there's no logic, there's no storytelling. Yeah,
but Crowbar was still the best part of it.
Yeah. He had a German suplex.
Crowbar was the best wrestler in this match. I mean, between the people involved and the Three the Hard Way of it all, it's a stupid fucking match, and you shouldn't watch this.
Yeah.
Crowbar's a gem, and we should all praise Crowbar.
And I like Vito, but I've never really cared for Reno.
Same. I actively hate Reno.
We then see Buff Bagwell is up to something.
He's talking to some production folks, but I can't figure out what he's saying, who he's like, what?
We do get payoff for this.
Do we?
Yes. We then get DDP and Kevin Nash mumbling something about SOL. Nash does the, and you know what that means. And DDP looks straight in the lens and goes, shit out of luck.
Well, Nash is doing the obnoxious laugh. Like, I kind of thought that this was DDP being like, this is a fucking stupid. Like, the fact that Nash is doing the laugh, DDP kind of like drops his face like, oh, don't fucking. It's like we watched DDP catch the ick for this pair up immediately. But him deadpanning into the camera just, shit out of luck.
It's like, yeah, your gimmick's stupid. Yeah. Stop doing it.
Yeah.
Mean Gene is then with the Cat and the tasty Miss Jones.
Yeah, he looks at Miss Jones and says, you are tasty indeed. Ew.
Yeah.
So the Cat is rightfully mad at him. Like, hey, stop talking to my woman like that. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah. Cat's upset at Gene, and then he's basically not taking Shane Douglas seriously. It's like, I'll leave the country for 30 days and kiss his ass if I lose. I'm like, oh, so you're winning. Okay. Got it.
I didn't even get anything that had to do with the match out of this promo, because Gene also says a little shot of vitamin Gene will keep you up all night.
He's going to rock her world.
Like, the Cat talking about his match is secondary at best. This is about Gene thirsting over Miss Jones and the Cat being like, fuck off, old man. She's accounted for.
Our next match, it's the Filthy Animals, Rey Mysterio and Billy Kidman with Tigress versus Alex Wright and Chronic with Disco.
So this match is fucking cumbersome to say the least. This is the match where Chronic will be part of it for 7.5 minutes.
Yes.
Now, we have gone through this match to try to figure out when that 7.5 minutes begins. It is not bell to bell.
I think let's cover that at the end.
Okay.
Disco comes out in a Randy Moss Vikings jersey just for some cheap heat.
Sure.
Because, you know.
Football.
Yeah. During their entrance, Chronic come out with the stopwatch. And they give it to Disco. And then Alex Wright and Billy Kidman start. And Wright immediately tags in Adams. I'm like, you're paying for him, fair.
Yeah.
Commentary seems to imply the timer only goes when Chronic are in the match. Because it's a stopwatch, they are stopping and starting the time.
That's crazy, and they're not doing that.
No. Or if they are, actually, no, they can't be doing that because of the finish.
No. There's no way that that's what they're actually doing.
Adams easily overpowers Kidman, but Kidman hits a Hurricane Rana and an arm drag. Adams tries a big press slam, but Kidman rakes the eyes, and Adams stops Kidman with a full Nelson slam. And Wright tags in for the pin, but Kidman kicks out. Wright works over Kidman until vaulting head scissors from Kidman, and then Brian Clark and Ray tag in, and Clark just overpowers Ray. Ray trips up Clark and manages to hit a face buster, but Brian Clark counters a springboard wheelbarrow move with just a big slam. Mm. In the heel corner, they're actively monitoring the time. Clark counters a dive with a massive sit-out powerbomb, and he wants a meltdown, but Alex Wright wants the tag. Wright tags in and hits a suplex, and commentary once again is like, oh yeah, the time is paused.
It's not. That's not how this is working.
Wright chops Ray in the corner and clotheslines Ray after a head scissors. Ray does his fake 619 dive thing, but then walks into a spin kick. Alex Wright wants the tag out, but whoop, Chronic's time is up.
Yeah, which it was that... If it was happening the way that commentary seems to believe, where they were starting and stopping, that wouldn't have been 7.5 minutes.
No.
However, on the timeline of the actual match, yeah, 7.5 minutes makes sense.
The Filthy Animals then double team Wright with a Bronco Buster, and Wright almost fights them off until a BK bomb and the Nutcracker Suite for the win for the Filthy Animals.
Woo! Who could have seen that coming?
So I have some time codes for when. Could this time start?
Yeah, this turned into a whole conversation with Nick and I because, like, we could not figure out how this shit was working. The match on Wikipedia runs 7 minutes and 46 seconds bell to bell. So when I saw that and saw the time stipulation, I was like, okay, that tracks. But that's not how it fucking works.
Yeah, the Filthy Animals double-teaming Alex Wright goes for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Goes for more than...
10 seconds.
Yeah. So at 55 minutes, 18 seconds, we get the music hitting, the start of the music.
Nick is going off of the time codes of the whole file.
Yes. At 55:37, they give Disco the stopwatch. At 56:13, they call for the bell. Mm-hmm. At 56:26, we get the actual bell. At 1 hour, 1 minute, and 7 seconds, Tony claims we've hit the 3 minute mark. Well, on the stopwatch, we can see it says 5 minutes.
Right.
And then an hour, 2 minutes, and 27 seconds, Chronic leaves. So, from the entrance, it is a touch over 7 minutes. However, it's not 7.5. With the stopwatch, it's under 7 minutes. From the actual bell, it's just about 6 minutes. From the 3 minute mark, if that means they've been in the ring for 3 minutes or they have 3 minutes left, I don't know. They leave a minute and 17 seconds later.
So none of it adds up to 7.5. Not one of these adds up to 7.5 or over 7.5.
And you know what they really could have done to save that? Don't give us an actual time.
And don't show us the stopwatch.
Yes, just say a limited time.
Yeah.
Just say that.
Yeah, you have about 7 minutes.
And then admittedly, we probably would have gone in and been like, why did they have them for 6 minutes and 18 seconds?
Yeah, probably. But like,
but yeah,
don't show us the stopwatch. You could have gotten away with plausible deniability if you didn't show us the time code on the stopwatch as you're actively lying about what is on the stopwatch that you're showing us.
Yeah. As far as the match goes, it just kind of felt like everyone was stalling until the one story beat happened. And Chronic actually looked half decent when they were really like beating down Ray and Kidman.
Yeah.
The problem was then they have to sell and they don't look decent at all.
Yeah. So Chronic is good when they're on offense. They suck on defense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it does have the weird thing again with the Filthy Animals looking kind of like heels at the end where it's like, yeah, you outnumber the guy.
It does hurt my heart to give worst bit to Ray and Kidman. I don't want to do that. I love them. They're great. They're just put in bad matches.
Backstage, the Thrillers just kind of argue slash chat about setting it off. And
going to set it off.
Mike Sanders has something in mind for the tag match.
Yeah, he's going to set it off.
Gene is with Scott Steiner and Medasia, and they have the straitjacket, although I swear earlier in the night they say
they did.
You can see the straitjacket above the ring.
So when they're announcing the caged heat, the cage over the ring as the show begins, Tony Schiavone is like, you can see the straitjacket hanging from the cage, it's gonna be a wild night, like something like that. He acknowledges that the jacket is in the cage.
Oh, and if you end up going to watch the show for some reason, it's hanging in like one of the like corners. Because I was looking, like, I look at the center of the ring, and I'm like, where is it?
No, I think it's meant to be over like one of the corners, like when the cage comes down.
See, what they need to do is get a massive flagpole that only Jimmy Hart can climb up and put it up there.
Yeah, yeah, that's the plan.
Our next match, it's Shane Douglas with Torrie Wilson versus the Cat with Miss Jones. Douglas cuts his usual style promo and
he says, twisted steel and sex appeal.
Steve Ray calls out the lack of reaction. I'm like, dude, you're not wrong, but come on.
But like, read the room. They're not going to react for you either.
Douglas tells the Cat to come out and get his ass franchised.
And then the Cat says he's going to twist his ass all over Milwaukee. Yeah,
I wrote the Cat has a mic and doesn't say anything of significance.
No.
Franchise is quickly sent to the floor. Miss Jones just kicks him in the face. Douglas and the Cat brawl at ringside, including the Cat and Mark Madden randomly fighting.
Yeah, why does he attack Mark Madden kind of like unprompted?
Because he hates Mark. Is Mark Madden
a prick? Like, sure, tracks.
Stevie Ray is cackling at this.
Yeah, well, so I feel like there's a little bit of real in there.
Douglas suplexes Cat back in the ring, works him over. His commentary is uninterested in the match.
They have entirely fallen apart. They don't care. I don't care. The audience doesn't care.
Douglas knocks Cat down and chokes him with his boot. Douglas locks in a rest hold and the Cat powers up with dancing, but is put back down.
The power of dance.
Cat's 10-punch spot is cut off and the franchise hits a snap butterfly suplex. We get an Aloha crotch chop spot from the Cat and the crowd is mostly silent, including the Cat hitting his finisher, the feliner. No reaction.
No one gives a fuck.
Doesn't go for the pin. The women brawl to the biggest reaction of the match.
Oh, yuck, fight!
They get in the ring and Charles Robinson separates them. Franchise secretly wraps a chain around his fist and punches the Cat, but the Cat gets his foot on the ropes. Douglas stops the Cat a bunch and goes for a DDT, but it's countered. Miss Jones puts a red shoe on the Cat's foot, and Douglas turns into a kick, and it's fine because Douglas was also attempting to cheat at that time. So
two counter wrongs cheat. Yeah. Kind of even each other out?
I guess. Miss Jones and the Cat kind of do the cape dance spot that Sonny Ono used to do.
God, I fucking hate the cape. Because this cape barely touches the Cat's shoulders. To the point where I don't think the Cat wants the cape. I think that, like, the cape was secondary. And he was like, I'm just going to do my dance. And they're like, no, you have to have the cape because the cape's what gives you dancing powers. They're trying to Undertaker him. Like, make him supernatural, I think. Which is just weird.
You want to know my final note on the match? Summarizing it all? Well, moving on.
Did we even finish the match at the match end?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he kicked him with the red shoe and won. Like,
it's so fucking bad.
Yeah.
It's so bad. And we're still doing the thing where Miss Jones tries to match the Cat's dancing. They dance together, but not together. And the Cat does not like it. I obviously does not like that Jones is trying to take over.
Yeah, it just feels like everyone is just sleepwalking through every element of their job, like, minus the fucking cruiserweights. Say what you will about the Young Dragons and Three Cat. Like, they're trying.
They really are. It's almost like that New Blood thing really should have worked.
It's almost like with the New Blood thing, maybe the New Blood shouldn't have been the heels.
Right.
You might have gotten the crowd behind some young guys. Oh, shit.
It's amazing. Who would have thunk it? But you can't boo the established old classics.
That doesn't work for me, brother.
Exactly.
Backstage, Jeff Jarrett is upset to find all of his guitars have been smashed.
So you're saying that Buff told these producers backstage to go smash all of his guitars?
That, or that was his plan, was to get all these smashed so Jeff wouldn't have one to cheat with.
So the vibe I was getting off of those producers, they weren't going in and smashing guitars. If that's what we're going off of and that is the lore that you believe was being built, and I believe you, I think it was more likely that Buff was asking those security workers to block off an entrance so that Buff could go in and destroy these guitars.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
It's basically Buff is setting something up. Jeff Jarrett sees all of his guitars are smashed.
Okay.
Something happened. Yeah.
I'll take my theory.
I mean, Emily, one of these crew members definitely has some danger in him. He's still rocking the NWO shirt.
The NWO lives on, brother.
I like want to know, like, what is the last visual mention of the NWO?
I mean, clock this.
Yeah. Not counting the crowd, obviously. Pamela Paulshock is then with the MIA, and Chavo interrupts Rection before he cuts his promo. This doesn't really come up, but I'm like, oh, felt kind of weird.
Yeah.
Rection says that now this is personal rather than about country, and Pam ends this with a very Mean Gene type, like, summary line that doesn't work.
Okay, so, like, this isn't about country. Sure. It's not America versus Canada is what General Rection is saying. It's for the United States title. And I know the United States title.
It's for the Canadian title, Emily.
Okay, still. So I know that these titles are not beholden to a country, but when it is literally called the United States title or the Canadian title, it is inevitably beholden to a country. So it is still about country.
Yeah, Emily, it's just the Triple H thing of like, that was about business. Now it's personal. It's just
this is Paul Levesque talking to Phil Brooks. I know, but like, you can't say it's not about country when the title you're fighting over is about country.
Yeah, I wasn't as bothered by it.
It just feels hypocritical.
Yeah. Although, speaking of something that people are bothered by, we get a Blood Runs Cold vignette. I'm like, what the fuck?
This was very much like when we saw Jeff Jarrett arrive in AEW in 2021. We saw it on an old episode of television, and then we saw it again in more modern television. And I'm like, oh, we just saw that. That's weird. In my brain, it's the same timeline.
Yeah.
So when I saw the Glacier ad, I was like, oh, this is just like what's on the NWO timeline. But it's not. It's 4 years later.
As it's going, he doesn't even wait for it to be over. It's like Blood Runs Cold. Tony Schiavone comes in like, oh my God, not this again. Are you kidding me?
The war flashbacks going through Tony Schiavone. Like, you can tell this man is just like, so, like, don't make me do this again, guys.
Clearly it's going to be a comedy thing. There's no way they'd let him get away with that if it wasn't going to be a comedic payoff.
I mean, straight up, Mark, I wrote down his quote. He said, Mark Madden said, what are we thinking doing that crap again? It didn't work the first time. Like, I guess spoilers for me, because Glacier hasn't debuted in 1996 yet, really.
Hey, he debuted on Pro.
Exactly. You know, a show that we're definitely watching.
A show that we definitely can watch somewhere.
Somewhere. The dark web, maybe.
So, yeah, we'll have Glacier to maybe look forward to. It'd be funnier if they run this for so long that WWE goes out of business. Oh my God.
I think if we do get Glacier, it's going to be akin to Dustin Rhodes as Seven, where there's all these vignettes, and then he debuts and is like, this is fucking stupid, I'm not doing this, and we're going to do that again.
What if it's Dustin Rhodes as Glacier?
You do say he comes back, don't you?
Yeah, he's not going to be Glacier.
You don't know!
Let's go to our next match. It is Bam Bam Bigelow coming out to the ring with a microphone, being like, I should win by forfeit, because Mike Awesome can't wrestle. Ric Flair then comes out. Stevie Ray does not know Ric Flair's music.
He claims he's never heard this music before. This is the most classic wrestling music that has ever existed. Maybe you can equate it to Randy Savage or Hulk Hogan. But you know Ric Flair's music. If you don't know his music, you should not be a wrestler.
Ric Flair lies and says there's 10,000 people here to see him wrestle. One, even if there were 10,000 people here, they didn't all come to see Bam Bam wrestle.
God, no. I forget but also, that Bam Bam's here.
There's 55,000 buys. I don't even know if 10,000 of those cared about seeing the Bam Bam match.
Yeah. Like, again, I wouldn't have even known that Bam Bam Bigelow was on this card.
Flair suspects Bam Bam was involved in taking out Awesome. Oh, what gave it away? The fact that we saw him standing over his body with no remorse?
Gee, that couldn't have been it.
So Bam Bam is facing Sergeant AWOL. AWOL comes out. They lock up, go to the corner for a slow start. Bam Bam hits a knee and then a Samoan drop. The wall casually works over Bam Bam, and we get some more Al Gore jokes from Mark Madden. Like, nothing is happening in this match. No. Bam Bam floats over a back suplex attempt, but then misses a diving headbutt. They trade slow Irish whips, and the wall locks in a taker care of business.
A taker care of business?
Yes, the terrible submission move.
Oh, no.
Oh, God. I forget what the hell it actually is called. I think it's like a dragon sleeper or something.
Okay.
But, no, the taker care of business. The wall just drops Bigelow, and then he goes for a table, brings it in the ring. Commentary talks about the lax rules, WCW.
Those are pretty lax.
Remember that for the main event.
Relax. Relax.
The Wall hits a spine buster and wants a chokeslam, but Bam Bam hits a greetings from Asbury Park for the win.
Like, it was a quick match. I'll give it that at least.
Table never came into play.
No. He who sets it up doesn't always take the bump.
And then Bam Bam is just like suddenly down post-match. Like Bam Bam is selling this like he has like lost all feeling in his body.
Yeah.
And like the ref is calling for help, and Stevie Ray then like stops the ref and has a microphone but doesn't do anything. I'm like, what's happening here? Why did you have a mic? We're gonna be like, Bam Bam, suckers got to know.
Yeah.
Can you walk?
Suckers like, don't know.
Commentary like put on like the full Owen voice as Bam Bam is like slowly stretchered out.
This shit. When it's not real, sorry. But when it's not real, it's not okay. This is shitty.
That said, what was this match?
Garbage is what it was. My note is, Bam Bam may have won, but we all lost.
I guess there was some mild setup for this on TV, but barely at that. Actually, I mean, to be fair, there's barely build for fucking Awesome and Bam Bam. Yeah. So don't worry. I'm sure next month we'll get Awesome and Bam Bam to, you know.
To really close this out.
Yeah.
Not elongate it for 6 more months.
Let's go backstage. Mean Gene is with Buff Bagwell, who's laughing with a broken guitar. Buff Bagwell has to, like, balance the, like, oh, man, I really hope he's okay. I know all about neck injuries. Ha ha, Jeff Jarrett.
Like, I broke your guitars.
Yeah. I broke your guitars just like he broke his neck, I bet.
Jesus.
He's fine.
Yeah, he's entirely fine.
Well, in 2000, he's fine.
In this pay-per-view, there is not a single injury on Bam Bam Bigelow. He's fucking fine. Which is why I'm mad that they put the Owen voice on. Like, he's fine.
Not to be outdone, WWE is going to break out the Owen voice soon for China.
Ugh.
As a way of writing her out of wrestling the men.
Of course.
So let's move into our next match. Oh, it God. Is Canadian champion Lance Storm with the Canadian Major Guns versus the American General Huge Erection. Or if you recall, as Ric Flair announced, Huge Erection.
That's what his name is. Like, you can't get mad at the announcers for calling him by his name.
We do get a promo package for this match. I was like, oh, okay. I guess there was enough story to, you know, get some footage.
I guess.
It's been going for a while, it feels like.
Just because it's been going for a while does not mean that there is enough story to warrant this match.
They are still structuring out Bam Bam Bigelow.
Oh my God, yeah, this man is dead to rights.
Lance Storm comes out with a mic and taped up ribs. Storm points out that Ric Flair's claim that like this is the last match between Storm and Erection.
God, I hope so.
And he's here against doctor's orders as he's injured. It's like, oh, so heel fighting from underneath, okay.
He's the underdog. He's just so scrappy and strong. He has to defend Canada. Why are we doing this?
Storm says he has taken everything from Erection except his country, which he doesn't want. Storm then calls for the anthem, and it's interrupted very late as Bam Bam Bigelow is still being carted out.
Yeah, so they played the anthem to give, I guess, quote-unquote ring paramedics time to cart Bam Bam out. Kind of pad the timing, I guess.
It doesn't help that commentary is always just talking over the anthem, that I'm like, I don't even hear if the thing would have actually ended or not.
No, it wouldn't have ended yet. We've never actually heard the ending of the Canadian anthem.
I think we literally did once, and it might have been in Canada. Huge Erection then comes out to the ring, and Bam Bam suddenly attacks Erection before the match. He's been here the whole time.
Who yeah. could have seen that coming?
Swerve, like, bro. He's not actually injured.
What? That's crazy. I hate that they did the Owen voice. I genuinely hate when they do that. This is not the first time that's happened on WCW. Yeah,
but this is like the second instance of, I hope you remember this brief backstage segment, because it's going to pay off in a big way later right. on. It's like, we didn't even hear them say any words. It was like, hey, they're having a chat.
No, they didn't say a single word. Or maybe they did, but we didn't hear. Like, it was not mic'd. It was not for us to hear.
Storm works over Erection at ringside and then works over his legs back in the ring. Storm slams Erection's knee into the ring post, but is pushed off. Stevie claims he's never had heel manager interference, like Sherry doesn't exist.
Yeah. Sorry, we're watching you in the Hyun Hyun era. You definitely have heel Sherry. What?
And Sherry's better at interfering than Major Guns is.
Yeah, she's actually a character. She's actually doing something with her time, too.
Erection gets a bit of offense, but is put back down pretty quick. Storm tries to get Erection in the maple leaf, but he's in the rope, so the ref breaks it. Storm crotches himself, ducking under Erection, but counters a vertical Erection suplex, hits a suplex of his own. They trade strikes, and Storm hits a nice superplex, but runs into a power slam. Rexxion wants the No Laughing Matter moonsault, but he's cut off by major guns. Landstorm then wants a super back suplex, but he's pushed off the top rope. And Rexxion just hits the moonsault and wins.
No, I'm glad this ended in an unceremonious way, because like this just needed to be done. Just like slam him, be done. The end.
Okay.
Done.
I would use the more definitive there, because unceremonious just sounds like, oh, that was lame, which it was.
It was lame, and it was happy definitive about that, too.
Yeah.
I am happy about it because I don't want to fucking watch this shit anymore.
That said, our apathy is offset by commentary giving this way too much gusto.
They really do. And it's not just this match. They do it in others, I think, too. I can't think of which ones. But it's like the crowd doesn't give a fuck. But commentary is like, oh my God, can you believe that? Like, well, it doesn't match.
The way commentary is talking, we're getting another fucking everybody comes out to the ramp, be like, you earned this, brother. Hey, streak had to start somewhere, am I right?
But that also didn't make any sense.
No, it didn't.
They did that direction the first time.
Maybe it'll make sense the second time.
No, nope, sure won't.
But this was just not a good match.
No, it was a bad match.
Like, Jesus Christ, guys. It's Lance Storm. You can't get a good match out of him?
I think even Lance Storm sees the writing on the wall. He's like, this is a stupid storyline that I'm being forced into. There's nothing more than I can do with it.
Yeah, and the Bam Bam interference outside of the initial like shock didn't really matter.
But was it even shock? No one thought that he was actually injured.
No, I just forgot that he and Storm talked. So it was a shock that the payoff was just he attacked Rexxion. It's like, oh, okay.
I guess, yeah. I don't fucking care.
But I assume the title is going to be back to being the United States title.
Probably. Yeah, they're going to rip off that little Canadian sticker that's on it.
Hey, at least the sticker is a gimmick as opposed to TNA a couple times.
True.
We go to commentary and we get a shot of Tony Schiavone just exasperated between Mark Madden and Stevie Ray. It's like,
yeah. I would be too.
Give the man a vacation. Have Mike today call a couple.
He's going to have a lengthy vacation soon.
They hype up the rest of the show, and then Tony throws to a Starrcade ad, and the ad felt very Batman and Robin, and I mean that not as a compliment.
Not the good Batman and Robin.
There's only the one.
I know that all the movies have like weird fucking names. I'm thinking like the animated Batman and Robin.
Okay.
Not the fucking, is it George Clooney in that one?
Yes.
Yeah, not that one.
Technically.
Not the live action Batman and Robin.
The animated Batman and Robin is the new Batman Adventures, is what you're thinking of.
Sure.
Which Jamie fucking Kellner cancels.
Ugh.
Fuck you, Jamie.
What a jerk. One of us has very passionate feelings about Batman.
Don't worry, we'll get to that in our final Nitro.
What? We're not talking about Batman and Nitro.
It's relevant.
How?
It's the same guy who cancels Nitro that cancels Batman. We've talked about this. It came up in Controversy Creates Cash.
That's not going to come on our last episode of Nitro. I feel like that needs to come in our post-mortem episode where we talk about what killed WCW.
You know, if the next match was bad, that'd be a good transition. But actually, the next match was kind of decent. It's Jeff Jarrett versus Buff Bagwell.
Which is saying a lot coming from you.
Yeah. Like, this was a weird bit of, I don't want to say fresh air, but like, it's like, ooh, the air in here is stale. Let me open this thing of tennis balls. It's not a fresh air, but it's good air.
Can we open a window?
Nah.
Why did you say tennis balls?
You know,
of all things to open for a smell, you chose tennis balls.
You know, wait, are you not aware that like a new thing of tennis balls smells amazing?
Yeah, I played tennis. That's just not what I would think of as an air freshener.
Regardless. Yeah, it's Jeff Jarrett and Buff Bagwell. And Jarrett comes out with no guitar because Buff broke them all. Hey, continuity.
Hey, look at that.
Jarrett grabs a mic and tries to garner heel heat to, like, no reaction because the crowd's dead.
Yeah, they couldn't care less.
Jeff said Buff isn't the stuff. He's just a big goof.
Big goof. It's true. He's pretty goofy.
Buff comes out, flips off Jarrett immediately, and plays the crowd. Buff overpowers Jarrett, does his strut. Jarrett starts beating down Buff, and Buff hits a swinging neck breaker. Buff then hits a quick Vader bomb and hip tosses Jarrett all the way to the floor, and they very casually brawl around ringside, and Buff chokes Jarrett with the cable. Jarrett low blows Buff and then hits a chair shot. It's like, feel free to call for a DQ anytime now.
The rules, they're pretty lax, Nick.
We then get more chair shots.
Relax rules.
We noted this before. Keep that in mind for something during the main event.
Relax.
Jarrett tries to bring the chair in the ring. Referee, whoa, you can't do that. What are you doing?
That's one too many chairs. There is a chair limit. You're just not keeping up. You're not paying attention to the rules.
Jeff hits a breadth rope, fist drop, and then a rope attack. Jarrett locks in a Glargay sleeper, and Buff goes down. Buff powers up on a third arm drop, would you believe it?
What?
And Buff locks in a Glargay sleeper, but Jarrett, ever the crafty veteran, you can't put him in his own move. He suplexes out pretty quick.
Well, I mean, I feel like you should know how to counter your own moves.
Jarrett hits a flying nothing to Buff's feet, and Stevie Ray points out that Buff is technically a second-generation wrestler, thanks to Judy Bagwell.
Okay.
Not quite, but I appreciated the callback.
I appreciate the try. I really do. I appreciate the fact that they're paying attention enough to remember that Judy wrestled. I appreciate that. I'll take it.
Buff wants a blockbuster, but Jarrett just ducks on the dive, which I'm like, has anybody done? I feel like no one dodges the move. Like, he gets stopped by interference or he hits it.
Yeah, I don't know.
It just looked weird. I'm like, oh, yeah, I mean, just duck. That makes sense. It looked weirdly logical, and I went, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's fine.
Buff managed to hit a tornado DDT on a second attempt, but Jarrett kicks out. The ref is taken out in a baseball slide, and Jarrett grabs a chair, so implying that...
There's another chair.
Well, implying that, oh, the ref is out. Now I can use the chair, as opposed to when he used the chair before.
The referee started calling the chairs. You're not paying attention. It's not clocking to you, Nick.
David Flair runs in and DDTs Jeff Jarrett. Great. Jarrett kicks out. Buff Bagwell is pissed at the ref. He wants the blockbuster again, but Jeff catches him midair. Buff then hits a reverse DDT, and Jarrett crashes to the floor in a crossbody. Jeff Jarrett then pulls out a secret guitar from under the ring. It's like, oh, I guess that was there.
He's just got a stash.
He hits Buff and pins Buff as Stevie Ray questions, like, okay, why is the ref ignoring all the debris in the ring?
Stevie, stop bringing logic into this. The thing that I was confused about with this whole thing is... I mean, I guess I understand it in wrestling logic. Why was David kind of helping Buff? Because Buff was also presumed baby daddy.
But he was confirmed to not be.
Was he, like, confirmed?
Yes, via the test.
That was not a real test, and you know it.
Regardless, Jarrett beat him up on Nitro.
That was the most recent. That one made sense.
And Buff helped him, so we already covered that last episode.
Okay.
It is stupid.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, Jeff wins, and... This was actually a passable match. Like, Jeff Jarrett made me interested in a Buff Bagwell match.
I guess. I didn't really agree. I thought this was pretty... I think I was so bogged down by the shit that we'd been watching that when this match came on, I was just exhausted.
Oh, I mean, same going in, but I left it a little more energized.
I didn't.
It was a shame there was basically no story going into this match, so it was just like, a match.
Yeah, and I think that's why I didn't care too. Like, I guess maybe it's a reason I didn't care. But I was just so exhausted at this point in the show that I'm like, oh good, a fucking Buff match. Great. This is gonna be great. And I just didn't give it the chance.
I think part of it is I don't know whether we're just used to him phoning it in or he's not phoning it in, but if he is, Jeff Jarrett can phone it in better than the other wrestlers in WCW.
Yes, that is correct. I mean, I think we knew that though. Like, we've always said that Jeff Jarrett's a good wrestler. He's a fucking terrible promo and a terrible character, but he's a good wrestler.
Yeah. Well, Emily, we get a mix of a couple of those attributes in our next match. Oof. It's the Perfect Event versus Kevin Nash and DDP for the WCW Tag Team titles. I'll let the audience decide on who I was referring to in terrible promo and terrible wrestler during that.
You know,
it might
not be who you think.
I will say, it's not DDP.
He doesn't really promo, which is... helpful.
We get a video package for this as well, and I'm like, yeah,
I guess you gotta clear out all the guitar debris, you gotta clean the ring out. I guess
Mike Sanders comes out first and joins commentary, and it's like, why did he need to come out in his own? And it's like, oh, to explain that he has a manager's license.
But I don't think that would have mattered, because he's the fucking commissioner, so why does that matter?
Ric Flair said that,
but he's the commissioner. Emily, he supersedes that.
But he doesn't, except when he does.
He does.
But he doesn't. And then he does. But he doesn't. So it's stupid.
He doesn't need a manager's license to come out if he's the fucking commissioner.
The Natural Born Thrillers then come out with their whole group because the other Thrillers are serving as security for this match. So they're skirting around the no interference stuff.
Sure. What? The Natural Born Thrillers are cheating? That's crazy.
Match starts. Nash wants a powerbomb early, so the event go to bail, but then just come back. It's like, oh, yeah, the match.
Not the Perfect Event?
No.
It's just an event?
Oh, actually, shit, I can't say that, because that was Chuck Palumbo, remember?
He was the event, you're right.
Yeah, he was the main event, and then he was just the event.
And now there's the Perfect Event. This company loves events. And as an event coordinator.
And bashes.
Love that.
What if you were a bash coordinator?
Can I get my business cards reprinted?
Would you either be a bash coordinator or a palooza coordinator? Granted, one may or may not contain Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, I don't want that one.
Yeah. Nash overpowers Plumbo, who hits right hands until a Nash knee in the corner. Nash hits a framed up crotch chop elbow, and then Nash hits snake eyes and his rope attack. Nash and DDP clear the ring, and the Thrillers regroup as the crowd chant for DDP.
We do get some We Want Hall chants, too.
Of course we do.
Yeah. Have you stopped noting this?
I don't, yeah. I'm like, it's Kevin Nash is out here, and DDP's not exactly fighting him off.
But, like, was Scott Hall even that hot at this point?
When the guy you like is like, what if my buddy, who's pretty cool, came out? And it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I think the crowd would just prefer the husk of Scott Hall versus the Natural Born Thrillers.
That's true.
Nash and DDP fight off the fake security, and Ric Flair and Doug Dillinger and the real security come out to take over for the Thrillers. Oh, this is where Sanders reveals, I have a manager's license, so I'm able to stay, and he explains it to commentary.
But he's the fucking commissioner! Play that card, because that's a real card. You don't have to lie about getting some licensure that you definitely didn't get.
DDP and Stasiak lock up. DDP hits a clothesline, and Stasiak is ping-ponged between DDP and Nash. DDP hits Palumbo, and Stasiak hits a DDT on DDP.
You got excited writing that, didn't you?
It happens in, like, most of his matches, but it's always just a weird sentence.
DDT on DDP.
The Thrillers beat down Paige, and they hit a double slingshot suplex. Paige hits a discus lariat, but it's cut off from a tag. Palumbo then hits a big sidekick, and Nash makes the save on a pin. Steve Ray then starts talking about Kevin Nash having a herniated disc, and we just move on because Stasiak's ass comes out by DDP.
I didn't even hear them talking about the disc, because, but, this is a big ol' but.
Perfect Event set up for an assisted diving clothesline and actually hit it. Paige fights off the Perfect Event, but his legs are tied up before he's able to make the tag. Paige makes the tag, but the ref misses it. So, like, all right, Nash, you gotta go back to your corner. Palumbo locks in a Glargay Lumbo sleeper and...
Sorry, what?
A Glargay Lumbo, because he's no Columbo, but he is Glargay Lumbo.
Nope! What the fuck? DDP. What?
DDP powers up, hits a sleeper slam.
Glargay Lumbo, because he's no Chuck Palumbo.
No, he's old Columbo.
God
please.
Damn it, this doesn't make any fucking...
I said, DDP hits a sleeper slam, a move Shannon Moore hit earlier in the night. Stevie Ray goes, what was that? Nash tags in and the crowd barely cares at this point as Nash cleans house. Nash gets him out and powerbombs Stasiak as DDP hits a diamond cutter on Palumbo. Sanders pulls the ref out, but DDP then takes out Mike Sanders. The ref just comes back in and counts the pin for Kevin Nash.
And he wins!
Yeah, like, weird non-false finish, I guess? Like, I would have figured Nash would have done, like, another move. It was just like, oh, nope, he still has him. It was so weird, I'm expecting shenanigans tomorrow.
There probably will be. I don't know. This shit sucks. I am with the crowd. We're like, why the fuck do we care about this? I am so burnt out at this point in the show. Like,
yeah.
The way you were telling, like, retelling this match, I'm realizing, like, oh, maybe this was exciting. But no, it's just because the way you tell it, like, your voice has some excitement in it.
I actually thought this match, again, like, wasn't the worst, but, like, the crowd were not that invested throughout. Like, they popped here and there, but... Yeah, any heat spot, they were just sitting on their hands. And yeah, it was a well enough work tag match. I mean,
yeah, because DDP was in it. He's the only reason that this match was any fucking good. If it wasn't for DDP, this would have been a fucking standard corner to corner to corner to corner match for Kevin Nash. And it's just going to be hip checks, big arms, like punches, kick, like that's it.
I don't know if I mean this as a compliment or an insult, but I feel like the Natural Born Thrillers tag matches are always like, yeah, you'll get 2 stars out of them.
They're consistently mediocre.
Yeah, it's like they're never gonna like shit the bed like Chronic will, but you're never really gonna, you know, get a shining light out of that.
They will never be our best bit.
Yeah, they have the Chris Benoit rule soft applied to them. It's just a matter of we're never gonna. It's not an issue. It's just it's never gonna happen.
Yeah, I don't think there will ever be a show where we're like, oh man, I wish I could give it to the Perfect Event for the best bit. Like, that's not ever going
to
happen.
Yeah, admittedly, I'll have to go back and look and see, have we ever given one of their tag matches best bit? Because I feel like I've given best bit to
maybe a
Jindrak and O'Hare match, but it probably also had the
you
Filthy
like
Animal.
Them more.
Well, probably also had the Filthy Animals and some other good teams in there.
Maybe. You do like Jindrak and O'Hare. I don't get it, but you like them.
I like O'Hare. And Jindrak is growing on me, but he's still green as goose shit. Let's move on. We get Pamela Paulshock backstage with Lex Luger.
Everybody's being so fucking mean to her.
Yeah. Luger is insulted by Pam's integrity. And he's like, why isn't our match for the title? This is stupid.
She's not the one that makes the matches.
Yeah. And Luger says that tonight is Goldberg's retirement party, insinuating that, yes, the streak thing is still a thing.
I guess, but he wouldn't... Why would he have a party for him?
Pam then throws to a video package, and yeah, the video package kind of doubles down, and yeah, the streak's still a thing. Our next match, it's Lex Luger versus Goldberg. And Emily, what time is it?
It's Michael Buffer time!
It's Michael Buffer time!
For not the main event.
Let's bring him out!
They only paid for one Let's Get Ready to Rumble. Yeah. That's what it is.
To bring home the question stipulation, commentary fully doubles down. It's like, it doesn't matter that he's not here. Vince Russo was in charge and made the stipulation.
I have a theory on it. I think it's more a case of like the writers of the actual matches are trying to keep with what was established under Russo. Like, yes, this streak thing happened. But commentary, promos, backstage are all undercutting it so much that it's kind of a like the corporate people are trying to keep this real. But the talent are like, no, this is fucking dumb.
Ric Flair came out and said, I don't care about it.
Exactly.
But, like, you can't do that and then go back on it.
Exactly. So, like, that's kind of why I'm thinking, like, somebody wrote on paper that this is a thing. Ric Flair went out, didn't have a script. It was like, I'm Ric Flair. Fuck a streak.
I literally think it's just them changing their mind. Because...
I don't think it's production. I think it's the talent.
They're not going to go into business for themselves like that. Also...
I think it's so low stakes that they would.
I mean, it'd be one thing if Ric Flair just did that on Nitro. Granted, it's filmed later in the night. They go over Booker do a segment on Thunder that kind of doubled down on the, yeah, I want the title after Mayhem. So, yeah, they just can't make up their own mind. And they're also still in the, oh, Russo might be coming back. He might not.
I don't know.
Even commentary is fumbling over how little sense it makes. Match starts. Goldberg goes after the arm of Luger, and Luger just kind of stalls. Luger hits a back suplex, but Goldberg pops back up. Luger pokes the eye, hits a clothesline. Goldberg powers up after some Luger corner offense and beats him down.
Commentary is, like, shocked in the beginning parts of this match that Goldberg is strong. And, like, this is what I was talking about earlier, where their reactions to Goldberg being so strong are juxtaposed to the crowd not giving a fuck. Like, the crowd is silent for this. They don't care. Mark Madden is like, oh my god, he's so powerful. He powered out. He's so strong. Like, that doesn't work.
They also, like, act stupid when Goldberg gets suckered in once, and then he's a little cautious to, like, go in again. Like, why isn't he attacking him? Why is he going after him? It's like, because he got suckered in 8 seconds ago. Right. Like, watch the act. Like, as much shit as we give Stevie, Tony Schiavone is more, like, towing the company line stupid on occasion.
Yeah. He's ignorant, not stupid.
Like, Tony's trying to tell a bad story. Stevie is actively questioning every element of the story.
Yes, that's true.
Luger sends Goldberg to the floor and then weakly throws him around. Luger sandbags a power slam, but then Goldberg hits it and then hits punches. Goldberg wants a spear, but Lex pulls the ref in the way. Goldberg hits a jackhammer and wins. Okay.
They do make a huge deal of the fact that Goldberg spears through two men. Like, again, commentary is really trying to make this match bigger than it is. They make a huge deal about, like, oh my god, he pulled the referee and now both men are down.
Yeah, and Mark Madden's like, he speared the ref, he should be DQ'd, and it's not the original ref. And I'm like, again, one of these things is going to come up on Nitro, I bet, of some stupid bullshit. Because the finish is so flat that I'm like, clearly you have something else in mind. Clearly this is not it.
What if none of this comes up?
I don't know who Goldberg's facing at Starrcade.
It's possible.
I don't want him to face Lex, but
it's possible that they just like call this show a wash and move on.
But this match was shit. Like, neither man put in the effort. Like, I mean, I don't think Luger can put in the effort. Like, he is the British Bulldog. I can't care.
I can't care. Yeah, can't give a fuck.
But yeah, the weird finish. I'm like, I'm just ready for shenanigans.
Yeah.
What if Luger does another fucking bus tour being like, Goldberg should have been DQ'd?
That's going to be his bus tour? That's the fucking the Lex thesis Express of again? His bus tour?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, the thesis of the first one was, I want a title shot. This match was as good / bad as I expected it to be. It's Lex Luger and Goldberg.
Yeah.
Goldberg's good when he can kill nobodies, and Lex can't do a fun dive for Goldberg to spear him out of the air or anything. Yeah. But that brings us to our main event, and we get the cage lowering to Goldberg's music as he's like celebrating.
As he's
going to
leaving,
the back.
Yeah. As he's moving to the back, yeah.
Our main event, it's Booker T versus Scott Steiner in a WCW title caged heat straitjacket match.
And note that the straitjacket is hanging from the top of the cage over one of the corners.
Yes.
So not the center. Which is good.
Yeah.
I feel like they definitely said over the center of the ring earlier.
They probably said it during this match. We get a video package for this match as well, and it's Michael Buffer time again.
For reals this time.
Yes, we actually get Let's Get Ready to Rumble.
It's so jarring to not hear him say Let's Get Ready to Rumble. It's like dystopian.
There was a small part of me that was hoping he was going to do Let's Bring Him Out again.
Let's Bring Him Out. You either get two Let's Bring Him Outs or one Get Ready to Rumble. You don't get both.
We're only able to rumble once. Was it just me or was Steiner looking extra big tonight?
I think that was just you. I think he was just extra oiled up.
Maybe. Steiner attacks Booker as soon as he enters the cage and Buffer just keeps reading as Steiner is beating his ass.
Constant professional he is. He's like, I have lines to say. I'm going to keep going.
Constant professional. He's just not looking up. He's just reading. Oh, the match started? He hails from Harlem, New York.
Not my problem.
Booker hits Steiner with a title belt and then goes around the ring looking for something. Can't find it. And then like kind of chases Medeja, who's still in the cage. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is Medeja still there?
Well, why is she in the cage?
She shouldn't have been in the cage, period, right?
Yeah. Steiner hits strikes in the corner and we cut to the straitjacket, which I totally missed up until now. Stevie Ray has promised not to get involved, whatever happens.
He doesn't. Spoiler.
Booker gets his foot up in the corner, then hits a Harlem sidekick. Steiner counters a suplex and then drops Booker on the ropes, crotch first. Mark Madden then has the gall to claim that this sport, minus hardcore matches, prohibits foreign objects and weapons.
What?
Yes.
The whole point of... Wait, sorry.
No. Not this match. He's saying this match is different. Other matches, you can't use foreign objects and weapons.
Do you remember the match we just talked about that had like 7 chair shots?
Yes, that's why I said wait till the main event. Because yeah, Mark Madden's like, whoa. I mean, hardcore matches, that's one thing. But regular matches, you can't use any of that stuff.
Is this technically a hardcore match?
I mean, it's KC. It's no DQ. He's just saying like in the hardcore division, they just use a bunch of plunder, if you will.
Mark, the plunder. Mark, let me tell you about the rules.
No, Mark Madden's not fucking wrong. That's the thing. On paper.
In WCW, he is. In 2000 WCW, he's wrong. We have been talking about the lax fucking rules for years.
Pretty lax.
This is lax rules WCW. You don't get to cite that you can't use weapons aside from a certain type of match in WCW year 2000. There are no rules. Everything is legal. It's fucking fine. Light your opponent on fire. It's legal. It's fine.
Everything's made up and the rules don't matter.
Correct.
Scott Steiner throws Booker in the ring. And I notice here, I'm like, the bottom rope, it's like really sagging in this match. I didn't rewind to see if it happened anywhere else, but it looked really loose. It doesn't come up at any point, no. But I was like, that's weird.
No, I didn't see that. But I mean, the way that the match ended, I was not paying attention to the bottom rope.
I mean, it didn't come up at any point. I was ready for it to be like someone takes the bottom rope off and uses a weapon or something.
Right.
Which is a spot that happens. It's just very rare.
It's really rare. I guess it would only ever happen in a main event, like the last match of the night.
Steiner hits a clothesline, elbow drop, and then does some push-ups. Steiner follows up with a weak backbreaker and then works over Booker with strikes. Steiner hits his spinning belly-to-belly for only a two, and Booker powers out of a rest hold. He wants a scissor kick, but just runs into a clothesline. Scott Steiner puts Booker on the top rope and hits a super angle slam. Steiner then locks in the most devastating hold, the bear hug.
The bear hug.
Booker tries to power out, but is put back down. Booker fires up, hits a missile dropkick. Booker then goes for the straitjacket, but Steiner stops him with a regular angle slam. It was like, oh, you did the cooler version already. It kind of seemed lame to go to the lesser one.
I guess, yeah. I mean, the fact that they went for the straitjacket kind of early in the match, I was surprised about, but commentary is very adamant on like, the straitjacket is not required to win. It's just an addition. Like, you don't need that. We could get a pin right now. It doesn't matter.
Yes, we didn't know it at the beginning, but this is just win by pinfall or submission.
Yeah.
Straitjacket is entirely extra.
But I feel like commentary saying that little stipulation undercuts the whole theme of the match. Like, we don't even need that. Like, guys, play it up a little bit.
I mean, it's really only here because the marketing had Steiner in a straitjacket.
Sure. But like, still play it up and be like, even if it's not required for the win, talk about how beneficial it would be to the person who gets it.
Yeah. Well, Steiner climbs up and he has to use the cage to steady himself, and he grabs the straitjacket, but Booker takes him down with an electric chair drop. Booker hits a spin kick and then tries to put the straitjacket on Scott Steiner, but he's trying to put it on backwards.
Yeah. Oh, is that what's happening? Because it's yes. not going well.
Yeah, the first time he's struggling, I went, what? And then he like flips it around like, oh. So Booker manages to kind of put it on Steiner. Like, he only has one of the like back hooks on, and it's not the one that matches. He also doesn't lock the arms across or anything, so he's just put that Steiner in a fucking sweater.
It's important for Steiner to be in this straitjacket. I don't yes. know that it's important for him to have his full arms crossed and locked into it.
I don't know, but because the arms aren't locked, like I said, he just puts him in a sweater. Like, there's no other element yeah. to this. The whole point is your arms are trapped, and they're not here.
Right.
But they also treat it like it is, because Booker grabs a chair, and we, like, kind of have shades of Royal Rumble 99 of Booker T just smashing Steiner over the head with unprotected chair shots.
Jeez.
Granted, it's only two as opposed to, like, 11 or whatever the fuck The Rock did.
Jeez. I thought it was more, I thought it was, like, 13.
It might be. Steiner's then on the ropes, and he rips the sleeves of the straitjacket off, but he wasn't tied up, so, like,
so it was fine, I guess?
Yeah, still kind of a cool spot, but undercut by the fact that he wasn't really trapped.
Jeez.
He escaped the sleeves of the jacket, which were not hindering him at all. As evidenced by, he managed to rip off the sleeves of the jacket while in the jacket.
Right. He was still in the... That's what I'm saying. Like, it wasn't yeah. maybe it wasn't important for him to like be fully in the jacket because he had to do that spot. I will say the visual of him tearing off the sleeves of that jacket, it was pretty cool. Like, yeah, obviously it was a tearaway, whatever. But I thought it was cool. I liked it.
Steiner clotheslines Booker, then locks in a recliner, but Booker powers up, and he gets Steiner on his shoulders to drop him on the ropes, but Scott Steiner fully lands on his feet and then, like, falls forward. Scott hits an overhead suplex, then goes to Brett's rope and dives into a bookend, but Booker can't cover him immediately. Booker hits a swinging neckbreaker and then a scissor kick, and he gets up with a spinaroonie as Steiner grabs the chair in the ring. Steiner hits Booker over the head and then a full Nelson bomb, and then makes Booker pass out with the Steiner recliner. Except if you ask Stevie Ray, who just shouts that Booker didn't give up and Booker's actively getting screwed in Scott Steiner being the new champion.
You're a lot more upset about this than I am.
I thought he ruined the moment.
I disagree. I think it's okay that Stevie did this for two reasons. One, Steiner is a heel, so we shouldn't be excited that he's winning. He's, I guess, three reasons. Two, he's unseating a deserving champion that has been working for it and is a face. Three, it's Stevie's brother. So he's going to go through the stages of guilt and doubt of like, there's no way that my brother just lost. Like, he's going to go through that immediately.
Yeah.
Sure, it's undercutting the moment in that, like, in that sense. But story-wise, I don't think this was a bad thing.
I think you could have done way better if he had gone, holy shit, he beat my brother? Like, how? Like,
understated, yeah. It's not gonna work.
Yeah, put over
understated, it's never gonna work. With
no,
somebody.
Yeah, put over the fact that it's like he can't believe he won because holy shit, my brother's the guy, and you just beat the guy.
I agree. I think that yes, that would work if this was a company that did anything understated.
Yeah,
if you're trying to get Stevie Ray to like do a little bit of acting and be like, oh my god, I can't believe, even something as little as like lowering the tone of your voice and being shocked. That's not going to happen.
Well, Stevie
this
also
needs to be screaming doubt and just like, there's no fucking way. Blah, blah, yeah, like, that's how
he accused the ref of being on the take.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he lost, dude. Like,
yeah.
Like, he just comes off whiny. And that's why I think
he does come off yeah, whiny. But to me, it's like the stages of grief.
No, but yeah, for the first time, Scott Steiner is the WWE champion.
That's kind of crazy. It's the first
time. I know. It's kind of like how Goldberg is like a one time or two time WWE champion. It's like, what?
Yeah, really? Right?
Post-match, Scott Steiner smashes the knees of Booker with a chair and then hits a ref as well as we go off the air. And I was like, okay, good. I was almost ready for like, oh, we're reversing the decision or you're stripped the title. I was like ready for like a weird swerve.
No, they do cut to the end title pretty quickly here. And hey, what's the copyright year on this?
I don't know, Emily. What year is it?
I've been to the year 3000.
Well...
You know, literally says copyright 3000 on the final title card.
Well, it's because Scott Steiner is so 3008 and Booker so 2000 late. Which a terrible lyric. Thoughts on this match?
I actually didn't hate this match. I'm very quick to shit on Scott Steiner, but I thought this was a fun match, actually.
I thought this wasn't too bad, but like not like anything crazy special.
No.
The straitjacket just did seem to be there for marketing, but and also like, you know, you got the cool spot of it of Steiner ripping out of it.
When was the last time there was something on a pole that was actually important to the match?
Viagra?
No.
Remember, Billy Kidman almost OD'd on the Viagra, remember? Remember, Emily?
That wasn't crucial to the match or the story.
Judy Bagwell.
Judy Bagwell was on a pole. She was on a forklift. I asked about poles.
Well, technically, Booker, like, re-won the title via the four-pole corner match.
That was also really dumb, though. Yeah.
I am glad to see Steiner win. It's like, creative seems interested in Steiner as opposed to Booker. They don't know what the fuck to do with.
That's true. I mean, that is true. It's a bummer that they didn't know what to do with Booker because, like, he could have been interesting. We've seen that he can be interesting. He's part of my favorite wrestling segment ever. So, like, it's possible he's there. But Scott Steiner is definitely giving the producers and creative what they want.
Yeah, I do wonder if we're going to take a little break from Booker because probably. The post-match angle, it's like, it kind of seems that way. Like, I know he comes back before the end, but yeah, I'm happy to finally have Steiner as the champion. And I was going to say, I don't know who he faces next month, but based on future stuff, I have a hunch.
I think it'll be an interesting run. I think I'm going to get pretty sick of him pretty quickly. I wonder if we'll get a Best of Sex promo again.
That is my one thing. I'm like, ooh, we probably will get a bunch of unhinged promos.
We did hope that we would get a Mean Woo by God Gene when Ric Flair came back.
I'm looking forward to Scott Steiner talking about how he celebrated tonight.
Oh, with his freaks.
And his peaks. But any thoughts on this show as a whole?
Brother, this was rough.
I feel like at the start of this show, you're like, oh, it wasn't that bad. And yeah.
It was not a good show. It was fine. It was very middle of the road for what we've been watching. It's not a good show. And I actively lost my mind throughout watching it. If you follow us on Twitter or Facebook, I posted a video of me actively losing my mind. I don't even know when it was in the show, but there was a shot of Steiner in the ring. And there was a woman behind him. A human behind him. And all you could just see was their eyeball. And it got me in the giggles. And listen, we drink when we watch these shows. I hadn't had that much to drink. It wasn't a like drunken night of like everything is silly. I was just fucking losing it.
Yeah, I think this show doesn't get remembered because there's not the fun low light everyone talks about. This is a war of attrition and yeah. Oh, it beats you down. And like, you know, we'll get into it with Best Bit, but the highlights are not enough to be like, oh yeah, this show is salvageable. It's like it's not. It is 12 matches, and I think we said coming in, 9 of them are 2 stars or less. And when it's just a bunch of nothing, it wears on you.
Yeah, it really does. Like, and I think that's why I'm like, this is a middle of the road show. It's fine.
It's forgettable.
It's incredibly forgettable.
Like, outside of, you know, the novelty, hey, Steiner won the title for the first time. It's like...
Yeah. And this is the thing that happens with the early WrestleManias. You can't bank your entire show on one moment of light. If the rest of your show sucks, WrestleMania 4, then you can't just be excited about the one thing in the main event. I'm happy this is over. I keep saying that for all of our big shows recently. Like, I'm not happy that this is our anniversary episode. That kind of sucks.
That's weird.
This is a weird one for it to be our anniversary episode. I'm not excited for this to be over in the sense of like one less show for us to keep going down the line with, but I'm happy that this viewing experience has ceased.
It's wild that a year from today, we will be done with WCW.
That's bizarre.
WCW proper, you know, the invasion.
Yeah, we have plans, but like that's crazy.
We got a lot of goodbyes and last matches in the next year.
Oh, I'm sure.
But before we get to our final year, we need to finish up with this show. Let's go into best bit, worst bit, and MVP. Emily, what did you come up with for your best bit?
I mean, it has to be the 3 count Young Dragons Noble Courageous match.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there is another option.
Oh, we didn't note it during the match, but the fact that they are noble and courageous, I don't know if that's a coincidence or not.
I don't know if it's a coincidence, but like, I don't know that they thought that far ahead.
No. But no, I agree. That is the main option for best bit.
Yeah. Worst bit, we're flush with options. Brother.
Yeah, I'm still going to go with Man Cow and Jimmy Hart.
I was kind of leaning that way, too. It was between that and the Chronic Boogie Nights animals match.
I'm going with the one that just feels like a waste of time.
I think I will agree with you. That one was one that I had like most written in.
And then, Emily, who is your MVP?
I actually don't have anybody written in right now.
Yeah, I was looking at the whole card, and I decided it's a mix of, I think he earned it tonight, and, you know, one of those lifetime achievement. All right, you know, you've probably earned this over time. For the first time in the podcast, I am giving MVP to JEFFJARRET.
Is it really the first time you've given him MVP?
Emily, it's the first time either of us has given him MVP.
That's crazy. Yeah. I don't think he deserves it, but that's crazy.
He made me care about a Buff Bagwell match, and honestly, his match was the first one in like 5 or 6 matches that I'm like, it's really like finally some good fucking food. It's like, oh, finally, I've made it to Applebee's.
Oh, no.
But you gotta pick somebody here.
Oh, God, I don't know.
And you can't give it to Pam for getting bullied all night.
The only thing that I've got is DDP for his tag match, which is weird because I hated that match. But I didn't give it worst bit because of DDP.
He's the one shining light in that.
Yeah, he was the best thing in a bad match.
He brings the most value.
Yeah, he is the most valuable person in that match.
There you go.
DDP, right. There you go. Man, the pickings, they do be slim.
Yeah, this was... it doesn't help that in our best bit tag match, like, it's so evenly spread that nobody really, like, went head and shoulders above anybody else.
No, that's really true. And I think that's a good thing for a tag team match. Like, you don't want one person to be standing out.
You say as you gave your MVP to someone in a tag match.
I know, but it's a good thing for them all to be equally good. Yeah. It's not a good thing for them all to be equally bad so that one guy being average is the best thing in the match. I'm giving it to DDP out of spite.
Yeah. Well, that's going to do it for Mayhem. Next up, we have the follow-up Nitro. Then after that, the day after Emily's birthday, on Thanksgiving, we have ECW Miracle on 34th Street.
Because it will officially be Christmas time.
Yeah, it also just lines up in the timeline.
But it'll also be Christmas time, Nick.
Which means we're going to be in December of 2000.
Crazy.
Yeah.
We're running out of time, man.
Well, something we're not running out of is previous episodes, because I don't know if you heard at the beginning, we have like 143+ previous episodes, all of them on our back catalog. Pretty much everywhere podcasts are found except for SoundCloud.
Like I did say previously, we do post on our social medias every once in a while, and you can follow us on mostly Twitter/X and Blue Sky.
How long has it been X that we still too just refuse?
Long. It's too long. It's mostly Facebook, Twitter, Blue Sky. That's where we'll post about all of our episodes being posted. Sometimes some random fun stuff of me just losing my mind. But everywhere there is at Butts in the Pod. But really, the best way for you to find our episodes and like be notified when they're posted is to subscribe to whatever platform you use to listen to our podcast, whether that be Apple or Spotify, whatever. That will notify you.
Yeah, we're bad at asking for a rating and a review.
If you want to leave us a comment, a rating, and a review, hell yeah, do that. If that's what brings you joy, absolutely. Go for it. It'll bring us joy if it's good.
Yeah, I think early days we were like, email us.
We do have an email. Yeah. It's very cumbersome. buttsintheseatspodcast@gmail.com.
And as Emily mentioned a good amount towards the beginning, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/buttsintheseats. $5 a month gets you over 40 bonus episodes. We ran through the new Monday Night Wars. We're going through the rise of the NWO. We got Bischoff and Russo book reports. We got a couple other fun bonus things going on over there.
Hogan Knows Best.
Oh, God, I forgot.
Legends House. You forgot about Hogan Knows Best?
I blocked it out.
Let me tell you something, brother. I never forget. It's right next to me every time.
But yeah, 40 episodes of that. We've been doing that for like over 2 years. We've been doing this for 5 and about to enter year number 6, the final year of WCW proper.
I know we've said it before, but something that started as a COVID project, something to get us through the lockdown, has become such a staple part of our lives and our relationship, really. Like, this podcast has seen us through dating, engagement, marriage, multiple houses, multiple moves. So many things for us have happened on this podcast. So it's just like, this is a little time capsule of our lives, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something funny that the listeners probably wouldn't know, but when we first recorded our first ever episode, we were in our apartment. It was a tiny little shoebox apartment. We had no idea how to set up microphones or actually get any kind of clean audio. So we had two microphones on a table divided by like school binders. And we sat there for hours, literally like a 5 hour file. It was so hot. We unplugged our refrigerator because the refrigerator was making noise. It was such a clusterfuck of a recording session. 5 years later, we're still doing that? Like, are you kidding me?
I mean, that episode is on Patreon.
It is. Not, and it's not in its five hour entirety.
I think it cut down to like 3 hours and 30 minutes.
It was a monster.
Yeah, I don't know if people kind of like realize and do the math of, we do an episode every other week. Each episode takes a minimum of 3 nights. And then we have the Patreon. Each episode also takes about 3 nights. So about a third of the nights each month is just us dedicated to this, on top of us trying to live lives and work. And
it's going to be a really weird hole in our lives when this does eventually end. We've talked about it. Like, every good thing comes to an end eventually. We have a lot of time before then. But it has been 5 good years.
Yep, we have plans for at the very least 2 more, so we're not going anywhere anytime soon.
Thank you so much for listening to us for 5 years. Hopefully you continue on. And if you know anybody who's interested in this stuff, this is a good time for them to start, because we're about to go into the final stretch of this garbage slop of a show. So if they want to relive the downfall, because most people did kind of fall off at this point. So if they want to tune back into what they missed, yeah, that was a great time.
Yeah, we're past the point that documentaries like to cover. We're in the period that WWE covered for all of about 180 seconds in their rise and fall of WCW. Yeah.
This is truly a no man's land of WCW.
All that said, a final thank you to all of our listeners. As we say, I think every year on these episodes, it's nice to know that, you know, if we are screaming into the void, you're in the void here with us.
Yes, that's very true.
Emily, any other final thoughts before we start down the road to the final Nitro? Technically, we're heading towards Starrcade.
Technically, yeah. Are you hyped for Starrcade? I'm not.
Because of the tragic thing we know, hey, at some point in the next 2 months, we're going to have a return of the master and ruler of the world.
Can't wait till he's back. I'm sure nothing ever will go wrong.
Well, I'm sure nothing will go wrong, and especially nothing will go wrong with that big corporate merger that's going on. But I guess we'll have to see. Until then, I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
And thanks for listening to this episode and 5 years of the Butts and Seats podcast.
Bye.